Members of the audience, I will call to order the Cultural and Outdoor Resources Finance Committee. Representative Murphy is before us. Representative Murphy, would you like to move your bill?
Not quite yet.
Oh, we don't have a quorum? I'm sorry, we don't have a quorum.
Not quite yet.
Representative Murphy, would you care to begin to discuss your bill, and we will move it as soon as we do have a quorum.
Thank you very much, Representative Morgan. Members of the committee and members of our very loyal audience, just as we did last year, our committee attempted to use a thoughtful and inclusive process that recognized the knowledge, talents, experience, and creativity of everyone associated with the committee. We participated in a mix of public hearings, informal conversations, professional testimony, and invitations to share ideas with us in writing. We held 5 hearings dealing with the overall budget solution. Mr. Baumtrog, Ms. Barondo, Mr. Roloff from Minnesota Management and Budget walked us through the governor's recommendations and helped us understand some of the decision-making that went into them. Thank you. We had 3 full committee meetings to hear from the agencies or our accounts on how the cuts might affect them and to help us identify alternative solutions to this funding challenge. Thank you to the Humanities Center, Mr. Romanstein, the Amateur Sports Commission, Mr. Erickson, Explore Minnesota, Mr. Edmond, with the Film and TV Board, Ms. Winters and Ms. Jepson, Public Facilities Authority, Mr. Kuhlman, Mr. Freeman, the 4 councils, Mr. Garcia, Ms. Herr, Ms. Hill, Mr. Collins, the Historical Society, Ms. Archibald, Ms. Kyer, Mr. Fox, Mr. Kelleher, Mr. Hill, the Arts Board, Ms. Jens, Public Broadcasting, Ms. Radzak, Mr. Nelson, Mr. Gullickson, Mr. Harmon, Mr. Sanford, Mr. Heen, Mr. Straczynski, the Minnesota Zoo, Ms. Adelman, the State Librarian, Ms. Suzanne Miller, the Department of Education, Ms. Wallstein, and Elaine Keefe with the Minnesota Library Association. We were so impressed by your willingness to participate in the solution and to acknowledge that everyone had to bear their fair share of the cuts. Thank you so much. On Monday, we invited representatives to our other accounts that the governor did not recommend cuts for to come and participate in the budget discussion and solution, for stepping up to join in the very hard work of helping to solve this very difficult task, where Dr. Tom Haggerty, board member of the Minnesota Agricultural Interpretive Center, Farm America, Denise Fossey and Valerie Doslin from the Children's Museum, Dr. Jolly and Ms. Rainey, and Thomas Murphy from the Science Museum in Minnesota. Monday evening at our last meeting, everyone, all those mentioned, and the staff and other stakeholders were asked, and our pages, Mike Bain and Reed Anderson, were asked to join together for an activity that proposed what they felt would be an appropriate strategy for meeting our division target of $2.5 million in cuts. You were asked to consider what you had heard in our meetings and talk about solutions. All of your proposals were used to help build the fundamental framework that is before us today. Thank you. The guiding principles that we followed as we deliberated your submitted recommendations were that the state has a number of proven agencies and organizations who deliver quality programming to the people of Minnesota. While we face financial challenges, we believe that they provide value and deserve continued state support. This is a statewide challenge. Everyone was willing to take their fair share and to address it. To the extent possible, we should stretch our state dollars as far as we can by maximizing federal match money. To the extent possible, we should be mindful of strategic investments we make and the impact they have on the state's and local communities' economy, as well as their impact on the positive quality of life for people who call Minnesota home, as well as those who come to visit. We need to be vigilant in abiding by the 3A's constitutional amendment and not replace general fund dollars with dedicated sales tax revenues. Moving forward, unless there is some dramatic turnaround in the economy later this year, the challenge we face this year will only be magnified next biennium. While that prospect is extremely daunting, it does force all of us to think about what is important and the best way to deliver the programs we are expected to provide. But just as the passage of the constitutional amendment funds provided new opportunities for Minnesotans to come together and engage in thoughtful, forward-looking planning, our budget situation also provides opportunities to work collaboratively to maximize resources and may allow us to open our minds to explore new ways of generating funds that will support our priorities. I encourage everyone to look at opportunities for generating additional non-state revenue to make up for the cuts provided in this bill, including but not limited to entering into contracts for services with appropriate stakeholders, state agencies, or tribal governments, developing new public-private partnerships, including sponsorships for activities, advertising, and providing service for contract. Exploring online merchandising agreements. Increase the percentage of costs of service that is recouped through appropriate user fees. Again, thank you. I appreciate your cooperation, your talent, your attention, your willingness to hang in there with me, no matter what time. Minnesotans are very lucky to have you working so hard for them. You're the very best. Thank you. Thank you, and thank you.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. We do have a quorum now. Would you like to move your bill to get it before us, and then we can amend with the Delete Everything Amendment?
Mr. Chair, I move adoption of 3015, the Omnibus Cultural and Outdoor Resources Supplemental Bill, be recommended to pass and sent to the Finance Committee.
Representative Murphy moves that House File 3015 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance. And Representative Murphy, we have a delete everything amendment, I believe.
Mr. Chair, we have a delete everything amendment, and I move A102294.
Representative Murphy moves the A102294 amendment, and I believe this will get the bill in the order you wish it to be. Is that correct, Representative Murphy?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Members, Representative Murphy has moved the amendment A102294. Is there any discussion? All those in favor of the A102294 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. We have the bill in order. Thank you, Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, there's one other amendment.
Representative Murphy, there is an additional amendment.
Yes. And I need
a I think I have it here. Is that the PMA 30 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy moves the PMA 30 amendment. Representative Murphy, would you please like to explain the amendment?
Mr. Chair, this amendment came up last, or the idea of it came up last year, and it came up again the other day when we were talking with the state librarian, Ms. Miller, about the Braille and Talking Book Library, and the idea that there was federal funds available for library services at, or librarians at the Braille and Talking Book Library in Faribault. And it was indicated in testimony that there is, because of the state freeze, they were not able to permanently fill those positions. And I spoke with Ms. Wellstein and Ms. Miller after the meetings, and it just seems to be something at the Department of Education that they were not able to tell me why it happened. But I think that the Department of Education should be encouraged to get a waiver. Other departments have gotten waivers. I know I read in the Duluth paper a couple of weeks ago that we're doing a national search right now for a new head of fisheries in the DNR department. So if one department can get permission to fill important positions, certainly the Department of Education, our most important department in the whole state, with our top priority of the whole state, and the libraries are within the Department of Education, they should be able to get a waiver to hire permanent employees down there. So that remember that the Braille and Talking Books Library serves all Minnesotans across the state who have needs. It's such an important thing. I think it serves almost 80% of our people over 55 in the state in some way or another. And so I think from what I heard from the questioning that this was something that we should bring to the attention of the committee and the department.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Murphy has moved the PMA 30 amendment. Are there any questions for the author of the amendment? Seeing no questions, all in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, say no. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. All right.
Chair?
Representative Murphy.
I would like to move adoption of the spreadsheet.
Representative Murphy has moved adoption of the spreadsheet for the funding portion of the bill. Madam Chair, would you like to explain the spreadsheet, or should I call on fiscal staff to do that at this point?
Mr. Chair, I would like to say that, in simpler words that I did in my opening remarks, that the spreadsheet is before us, that and it was developed after our meeting on Monday night, and we took the fair share cuts that were given to us in our $2.5 million bill reduction, and we tried to spread them across the all the agencies and authorities fairly, and the members of the committee and the stakeholders did not all have all the necessary data for especially the tails, and working together that evening after the meeting, we were filled in on other things and how in some cases it was much easier, better to put something in the first year and less in the second year so the tails would not go on, or the redistribution of the numbers worked better in the format that you see before you now. And even yesterday we still made a few changes. And we posted this on this and the bill on the website yesterday in time so that we can act on this today. But for further details, Ms. Roberts and Mr. Soderbergh can go over it.
Soderbergh?
Most people are very familiar with it by this time.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. Mr. Soderbergh, Ms. Roberts, I guess we would like you to walk us through it.
We'll just walk through real quickly. I think everybody's pretty familiar, having seen the accounts and went through the exercise just the other evening. So I would guess that you prefer the short version?
The short version.
The short
version. Short version would be great, Mr. Soderbergh. Thank you.
And very good. If you just look at, we'll just take Public Facilities Authority as an example. You can see the committee recs is on the left-hand column, the first three columns there on the left-hand side of the break in the middle of the page. And all it is it shows what is the committee rec and how that compares to the governor. We put the governor on the right-hand side so people can get an appreciation of what the bill, how the differences are between the committee recs and the governor. And you can see on Public Facilities Authority there is no differences. And that likewise flows throughout the entire spreadsheet, the differences. When you see a negative number, that means that the bill is reducing the appropriation by more than the governor on those particular line items, or change items as they're called. And when you see a positive number, that means that the committee recs as incorporated in the bill are above the governor. So the cuts are less than what the governor recommended. And I guess, Mr. Chair, that's the short version.
And Mr. Soderbergh, I can see that there are places where the committee recs are above the level of the governor's cuts and some places where they are below the level.
You will see
and
that.
And some places where they're the same.
Very, very much so, Mr. Chairman. And you'll see, when you see the, and I'm sorry that the copies that you have are so faint on the negatives, but the positive numbers would be above the governor. In other words, the bill that provides more funding than the governor.
The numbers without the parentheses.
Without the parentheses.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Soderbergh. Ms. Roberts, do you have anything to contribute to that?
No, I don't.
All right. Thank you very much, Ms. Roberts. Mr. McCormick, this is all contained within the body of the delete everything amendment that has already been moved and adopted. And am I correct? Do we need to adopt this spreadsheet separately, or is this just supplemental to the language in the D amendment?
Mr. Chair, I think it's probably a good idea to adopt the spreadsheet because the spreadsheet shows the out years and the bill does not.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. McCormick. Members of the committee, we've heard the short version of the spreadsheet. Are there any questions for fiscal staff or the author about the spreadsheet? Seeing no questions, then Representative Murphy, well, I'll renew her motion to adopt the spreadsheet. All those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, say no. The motion prevails. The spreadsheet is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Murphy.
The bill that we have amended and is before us then is the spreadsheet and the Hansen bill that was adopted the other day about the film board as amended, and that became the vehicle.
It's nice of you to steal Representative Hansen's bill, Representative Murphy.
He was very willing. It will have a short life, you know, because this is going to finance tomorrow, and then they will turn it into the finance bill on Friday. And so I think there's also the Nornis provision where we changed it from 4 to whatever it can be. And so those two bills that we heard on Monday are contained in here also.
Okay.
And now with the library amendment, that's all that's in there plus the cuts. So I move adoption of the renew my motion to adopt the omnibus House File 3014 as amended, the Omnibus Cultural and Outdoor Resources Supplemental Budget Bill, and that it be referred to the Finance Committee.
Representative Murphy is renewing her motion, but before we do that, I'd like to see if there are any questions, public testimony from the audience before we vote on the bill, or questions from members. Why don't we start with questions from members? Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Murphy, thank you for your hard work on this. Just a question on the rationale. I mean, I know there was some discussion of doing a more uniform percentage cut or something of everyone, but that doesn't seem to be reflected here. Just if you give us some indication as to the rationale for what you were doing.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, as I said in my opening remarks with the principals, one of the guiding things was how much federal money would be matched with an appropriation. For instance, the Humanities Center testified that they get a $1 match, and there was. That was one of the guidelines. The others were job positions that would be lost throughout the state or by an appropriation. The others were, there were a couple political decisions based on what the Senate was doing and what we were doing and what Finance Committee would smile upon or not smile upon. When I left our discussion with the leadership, indicated that if things didn't work out so hot, we would have to talk about my number again, my $2.5 million again. And so I wanted to use my talent and wisdom, knowledge, to try to even it out. But also, the testimony that was given by the various agencies and what they could get by with and what they would have to do with the money that was remaining in their budget. It's not perfect. But since we had so much input, and what was on the written sheets made a big impact. Last Friday, I had a different set of numbers before we started the process.
If there are no further questions from, Representative Mack, go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Chair Murphy, for all of the work. I am sure you have put many, many hours in here the last couple nights. And I had a question looking at the numbers here. And one topic that we talked about the other night in our work group was looking at some of the different cuts in the governor's recs and looking at the target, obviously, and everything. And one area that we looked at was within the arts board. It's, you know, from the testimonies we've had, and I've had many groups come in from my district and about the value of the arts board and their function. However, in looking at the grant dollars that are provided by the legacy funds and coming forward, one thing that I was looking at was the grant programs that are funded through general fund dollars and the appropriations. And if that is a core government function and something general fund dollars should be spent on to the extent that it has been historically, again, understanding that it's a vital program, but with legacy dollars coming, and I noticed the difference between the governor's and your recs, and in the committee's recs here coming forward, there's quite a big difference within the grant program, and I'm just curious if you could shed some light on your thoughts behind that, reasoning behind that particular. That was just one that stood out to me the other night in our discussions and looking forward, and I was just curious as to your thoughts on that.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, especially in this first round of cuts, I wanted to make sure that we were not going to test the supplement and supplant part of what the Constitution Amendment gives us in the legacy bill. But we talked for a long time about the recommendations from the one working group from Monday night's recommendations were. And I think that there is merit in what you were saying in the certainly not zeroing out any of the agencies, but kind of a keep the lights on kind of appropriation to them. But we have not yet heard the report from the Arts Board that was due on March 1st, and I have it in possession, and that was scheduled for today's hearing. But because of the push to get the bills done by tomorrow, we postponed that to next week. And so next week we are going to hear how the legacy money was spent by the Arts Board and other agencies also, but to answer your question, by the Arts Board, and what items or what kind of projects the legacy money was spent by throughout the state. And I think that the discussion that your working group had on Monday night and the questions that were being asked and the question that you're raised now could be a very good base for the questions to the people that present that report to us next week. And I think they're very valid, and I think we've got to discuss it to some extent, and not even at just one time next week either. But for now, as I said in my opening remarks, our agencies that we have are proven agencies that have delivered good service. We value them, and so I did not want to make huge cuts or make the decision that we were just going to, so to speak, keep the lights on kind of thing. But there will be room for discussion on that. And thank you for bringing it up.
No, I appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. And as I prefaced it, I value the role of many of these agencies, including the Arts Board and the functions that they have. And as you said, I think it is some valid questions, and I look forward to the report on the legacy dollars with grant programs, what kind of needs those are meeting, and how we can frame the discussion going forward based on that information. So thank you.
And I appreciate your help.
Are there any other questions from members? We had one person sign up to testify who is now telling us that they do not need to testify. Is there anybody else who would like to provide public testimony before we vote on the bill? Seeing no one rushing forward, Representative Murphy will renew her motion that House File 3015, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, say no.
No.
The motion prevails. House File 3015, as amended, is on its way to Finance.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Representative Murphy.
Committee. Thank you, everybody.
Folks, we still have some work left to do before I turn the gavel back to the chair. Please don't run off. We have another exercise, which I'm sure will interest you. So please stick around, and the chair will guide us on our next exercise.
It's as thin as I can get here. Is that Martin? Is David on the table?
Good deal. I'm here.
I should probably have a look. I wouldn't be surprised if he's back in the scene.
I think he's probably good at seeing
him. Oh,
we have three packets of minutes. Yes, we have minutes from March 3rd. Representative Morgan.
And thank you, Madam Chair. I will move the minutes from March 3rd as submitted. Move their adoption.
Any additions or corrections? All in favor say aye.
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 The minutes from March 3rd are adopted. The minutes from the Joint Committee on March 8th with the Environment Finance Division joining our Cultural and Outdoor Resources Committee. Minutes. Representative Brown.
Madam Chair, I move the minutes from March 8th.
All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. And then the Cultural and Outdoor Resources Division minutes that are listed for the 44th meeting. Representative Morgan.
Madam Chair, I will move the minutes from the March 8th meeting of the Cultural and Outdoor Resources Finance Division.
All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The minutes are adopted. Ms. Conley sent a notice saying bring your natural resources land evaluation report from the Office of the Legislative Auditor with you today. I hope we did, because there is so much stuff in here. And the legislative auditor made the presentation to the Joint Committee on Monday night. And then on Tuesday morning, we were invited to join the Environment Committee, Finance Committee for the rebuttal or the response by Commissioner Holston and Meyer. And there was only time for a couple questions. And there are some things that are in this document that came up as part of the discussions, especially on the Upper Mississippi Forest Land appropriation from the Outdoor Heritage Council's Outdoor Heritage Fund appropriation in the conference committee last year about land management, that I thought we should have some time where we can, as individuals on the committee, can review the recommendations and from this legislative auditor's report and develop some written questions for the Department of Natural Resources, the Commissioner of Natural Resources, Mr. Yonker, the auditor, and Mr. Nobles, the auditor, and maybe even some for Environment Finance Committee might come up. And I would like to use this time, working together or individually at this committee, on developing some questions that we can get and present them in writing to receive real answers, not off-the-cuff answers or not answers to questions that are really simple. One of the questions that I have written is some of the things that are in this report say that Department of Natural Resources do not have the resources, enough resources to do all the things that they are being asked to do in land management. And I wonder if that's the case, if we accept that, how will the Department of Natural Resources monitor and enforce a whole new mining industry that's coming along?
Good point.
I wonder, at the conference committee last spring on the Heritage Funds, we were told that the Department of Natural Resources was going to develop over the summer policies on wetland credits and carbon credits into the future. From my quick review of the auditor's report, I'm asking if the department has done that and if there are going to be recommendations in land management for what are we going to do with the credits for wetlands and carbon in the future. Are we going to? Is the state going to keep them? Which personally I think they should do. Or are they going to sell them with the development of lands that we purchased or easements that we purchased? In the testimony on easements, Commissioner said something like, easements we probably own today. So do we have good records of our land holdings and our easements? I heard in testimony that by 2011 they are going to be on the website, and all the data concerning them so that everybody will have them. I think that's a real good thing to look forward to. Representative Wagenius, can you help me frame some of the other things that we might want to ask questions about?
I thought the most, for me,
let me pull down your mic.
On page 50 and 51 of the auditor's report, I think he asked the fundamental question, and he said, that there are unfunded land management and operational needs throughout the agency. The problem is, the only place where we know what the dollar amounts are in Parks and Trails, and that's thanks to this committee, because we put in language in your bill that asks Parks and Trails to look into the future and figure out exactly what we would need in the future, and we don't have the funding. I think there was the assumption that people had in general that with the new money, there was buckets of money, and in fact, that's not the case. So that's the only section. So in this report, they've identified maybe five other sections that are land management sections, and in particularly wildlife management area, they have no clue, and that's pretty clearly stated in here, what the condition of all their lands are, what it would take to restore them, what it take to manage them over time, enforce. So I think that one of the fundamental questions that we need to get at is, how do we put in place a funding mechanism to, or a mechanism of some sort to make sure that when we purchase new lands, they don't put a burden on older lands so that all the lands are in worse condition? And that's what the auditor said. This is not my idea. This is what the auditor said on page 51. And he said, how it will pay for management, we're talking about new parcels, and any impact the acquisition will have on the type or frequency of management of existing land holdings. I think that's probably the fundamental issue that we need to deal with. And then under that fundamental issue, one of the first recommendations that the auditor made was that any time we purchase land, that there should be, let me see, and this is on page 30, their baseline reports for, and he's talking about easements, but this should be, this is just because this is the easement section, it should be for easements and acquisitions, baseline reports on the condition of the property at the time of the acquisition. And it seems to me that anytime anybody brings a piece of land here to be purchased, we ought to make sure that that's part of what is going on. And that's a discussion we need to have with the Heritage Council, I think. Mm-hmm. But that's that was the first of the recommendations that just stood out to me to be critical. There are a couple of others, but maybe other people want to talk.
Well, I know that one of the others is the section on tilt, and this indicates that the payments for tilt, the legislative auditor feels that are in abundance rather than what Commissioner Fink was saying when he gave testimony. Commissioner Fink is from St. Louis County, and he came and addressed this committee on PILT and state-owned lands in northern Minnesota kind of thing. And he was indicating that they felt that there weren't enough. So there is a difference of opinion there between the northern counties and the legislative auditor. And we should perhaps ask for a clarification between the two. Representative Haas.
Madam Chair, I think that the that this is not a universal fact, but it is specialized into specific areas. You know, when there's less property owned by the state, then this is obviously the concern moves down, and the more property owned, the concern moves up because it doesn't balance out as well. So. The difference may be in the location and the amount of property owned by the state. So,
and Representative House, the amount of money that the counties get, and when a lot of the land is in the townships, and they get, I think it was 2.5%, and that's not real balance.
That's not real balance. Madam Chair, I think it's traditional, too, that the township has a harder time getting their fair share of the dollars. I mean, that's just my personal opinion. It's not a fact, but it seems that way to me, empirically that way. Madam Chair, I'd like to go back to, as a county commissioner in the St. Wendell's Fen, I thought the best place to put that property was to give it to the state, because they take care of that type of property better than a county does. A county may take care of regional parks, but actually preservation of land. And we got quite a few neighbors concerned that the state would not or could not take care of that property. And then we got a whole bunch of neighbors concerned that the people would not be able to do active park things on the property also. So what I thought was going to be a simple ended up to be quite complex. We did get it settled, and I think they are taking care of it. But there is a general concern by property owners that the state cannot and will not take care of the property properly, so that they're, you know, especially in agricultural areas where there may be a weeds that they, you know, thistles that they don't want growing or whatever, you know. So there were pretty legitimate concerns. The other side of that, well, the activities was mostly hunting and trapping activities. Thank you.
Representative
Lauper. Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And just in response to Representative Haas' comments, I mean, one of the questions I had was not just the active management of the land, but also the enforcement. I mean, we've seen, yes, where in some parts of the state, those active users, not all of them have been respectful of the resource. And the DNR enforcement budget has not kept up with, I don't think, the growth of these acquisitions as well, in terms of catching people who are not doing the kinds of things that we want to do on these wonderful jewels that we're to preserve for others, and to make sure that legitimate hunters and fishers and other people can use them. The pill table that I thought was interesting on page 68 was showed the difference in terms of the valuations by county, and where they found some real differences between some places it was overvalued and some undervalued. And in the tax committee, you know, we really try hard to make sure that every property owner across the state is, the state is treated equally, and every community has, you know, a fair assessment. And I think this is one that we're going to have to address, and also address, you know, whether looking at a property every 5 years is reasonable, given that you have to reassess every other property every year, and with rapidly changing fluctuations in values because of what's going around with the surrounding properties. I think it's fair for us to look at that. But the biggest concern, is that there didn't seem to be a common consensus on what is the role of PILT and what is the role it should be playing within the community that has public lands. And I think that's an issue I'm interested in working with others on, in terms of helping define, because this issue is just going to keep coming up over and over over time. And if we can, I don't know that there's any one definition that anyone will be happy with, but I think if we can say from this point forward, as you know, this is our viewpoint, I think that will help with the uniformity and for communities to know what they're getting into when either they are offering up or landowners in their their community are offering up properties.
Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One question I think if we can get some more detail on from the DNR or from the auditor is special purchases or special PILTs. I think with Lake Vermilion, the legislature passed an exception to our normal PILT payments for over, I think it was 1.5 times the normal rate, but my memory is not exact on that. And the question would be, how many of those special exceptions are there? You know, and how often do we do those special exceptions as a body, and that they're signed by the governor? And what impact does that have on the overall averaging here? Because I've had anecdotal comments that there's some other special exceptions before the body this year. And so, you know, whenever there's something special, it can pull the average one way or the other. So I'd like some details on that, if we can get some, maybe a history of specialness and how many times there's those errors occur.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe you recall in our last meeting I asked about assessments. And I do have some questions regarding assessments, and from what I've heard regarding a local project near and dear to my heart, let me just relay a little bit to you. Land values in Meeker County have been assessed at a higher rate surrounding the Greenleaf State Recreation Area. However, interestingly, the two assessments were done of the recreation area itself, and the land values dropped in one of them and didn't in the other. So the DNR took the lower land value and certified that, and now the owner of the land won't sell it because it's lower than everything else around it. So kind of interesting how that works.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I looked for my book. I couldn't find it this morning, but I was in the other committee, and I very much looked through it. And for me, I essentially have four questions that concern me. And through the study, it basically told me that we don't really know what we have. So I'd like to know what we do have, you know, like in a map form, et cetera, dates, goals, why we actually acquired each of these parcels. You know, so why do we have these? You know, what each one? I mean, I'm sure each one has a different story, so it'd be kind of neat. And I know there's thousands of them, but there's really absolutely no reason that we can't know why each one was bought ultimately for a reason. The second question would be, can these easements that we have, for example, can they be improved? Perhaps offering a greater community service or another opportunity, not just preservation, but perhaps, you know, offering, you know, enhancement to this easement for whether it be hiking or hunting or trail development or something. So not just having easements, but maybe they can serve a greater common good. And so I don't know the answer because of, you know, each one's going to be different. The PILT has been talked about a little bit, and it just seems to me that we should develop a rate, a standard for the state that's fair across the board, and that's kind of was what I think Representative Loeffler and others have been talking about. And then the final question would be, why are easements, you know, through here it says we're not following up and checking on them. So we've bought these, we've done these, so why aren't we checking on them? And then, so I'd like to know the answer of that question. And so is that staffing, or is it just, you know, sloppy, or, you know, just what exactly is going on? So I liked how you framed your original questions to get real answers. So many of these I'd like to have real answers for. I just can't imagine a scenario, kind of going back to the first one, why we have thousands of them, and it's pretty clear through the study that they don't even know where they are. So thank you.
Representative Loeffler.
Madam Chair, this is an area I don't know a lot about, but I have a friend who actually is a volunteer easement monitor for a nonprofit that owns property and land, and it seems to me that in the solution to this, we might want to look at a variety of different models and ask the agency to do that rather than just professional year-round staff. These could be wonderful summer opportunities for college students who are majoring in environment and sciences and other things who would love a chance to get out and explore, you know, different parts of Minnesota. And so I'm just thinking in terms of how we might want to structure going forward, since our budgets look like they're going to be constrained for quite a while. While I try and create permanent jobs wherever I can, if we can't do that, I think we ought to look at some creative approaches to solving this problem. And I think our college students would love to have summer jobs doing this kind of thing where they, once you train them, they know what to look for.
Representative Guinness.
On the PILT issues, it seems to me that there is a lot of unfairness in PILT. And you look at page 63, and Otter Tail County is doing really well, and Aiken County isn't doing well. That doesn't make any sense. And part of it is because acquired land gets treated very, very well, and old ConCon lands and school trust lands don't get treated the same. So it's the new acquired land that are where the real high percentages are paid. I don't think that the DNR has the capacity to help us out with the PILT question, but maybe we should talk about asking our fiscal staff and House Research as a summer project to work on the reform of PILT. I know that, I shouldn't say this in public, but that I'm going to end. Yeah, you're right. Mr. Reinholz, who's the fiscal staff for Environment and Natural Resources, certainly has a capacity here. And I know that his partner in crime right over there does too. So there, we do have the resources, I think, in a summer project, but it's just much too much to do right now. So, but I would hope that we could recommend setting up something to work on PILT.
Good idea.
And if
good
I
idea.
I have one other thing.
Go ahead.
You mentioned right at the beginning the carbon and wetland credits and your thought that we shouldn't be letting as we or how they're treated. And I think that's public policy and that we should make those decisions. What was surprising about the forest easement that brought this issue up, it was a change in policy without any legislative input because we'd never done that before. And not only was a change in policy, it was secret because it was done in an easement and nobody could know until it was done. And then we were said, hands off or this deal will fall apart. I think we need to have a policy and it's formal and it's probably statutory, how that issue is resolved. I don't think that is the issue again for DNR. I think it's an issue that a different group of House researchers might want to deal with this summer because these are big and thorny issues. Mm-hmm. But over the interim, when some really good work gets done when we're not here, might be a good time to look at both of those two issues I just brought up.
Good idea. Representative Houston.
I'm the cynic in the group, and I am going to say it publicly. Unless the next governor has the courage to provide the leadership to actually read legislative auditors' reports that relate to certain yep. things and provide the leadership to change it, and unless legislators in both the House and the Senate have the courage to read and respond to the recommendations of legislative auditors' reports about certain issues, nothing will change. And we can pay the Office of the Legislative Auditor again, and 5 years from now, the same report. Yep. And I base this on one past legislative audit, and that was motorized recreation, which was a devastating indictment. And as far as I know, virtually none of those recommendations have been enacted. And if you did the same study today, you'd have the same outcome. And there are parts of this that I would predict the same outcome unless Governor and House and Senate have the courage to read what it says and say it's not right. But there is a political force that some are very, very afraid of that has kept us from acting in certain areas.
I tend to agree with you, Representative Hausman, and that's why I thought it was important enough to use this remaining time today to address this one, this report in particular. Representative Hansen.
I know Representative Egan has had his hand up.
I had you down, though. Okay, Representative Egan.
Thank you, Representative Hansen and Madam Chair. One question I would have is deals with the assessment of the properties and how that's actually done. There's different values you could assign to the properties based on its use, and is it being assessed as its value as a wetland or as a wildlife refuge, or would it be assessed at its value as farmland, for instance, which it would have been used as if it hadn't been purchased by the state? I think that's something that needs to be taken into consideration, and I think it's a good question, too, as far as what PILT actually is and what its purpose is. I have my own views on that and feel that it's to make a community whole and not to lose the value of tax revenue that they otherwise would have received. I think you also need to consider the economic impact all the way around of lands being purchased by the state, not just that property itself, but obviously if you're taking, for instance, farmland out of production, you're also going to have an impact on the whole community as far as less business activity, right. Less things being purchased and sold. So I think that should be also considered as part of the process of evaluation here and trying to make a community whole. But so that would be a question I would have as well. Are those things also being taken into consideration?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think another question is to bring in contrast, and I tried to do this in the hearing, was to contrast between the Board of Water and Soil Resources and the Department of Natural Resources on their easements. And the auditor described some of that, but you have different approaches and I think different constituencies. The Board of Water and Soil Resources, we did have a legislative audit report 3 years ago when we made a lot of changes for accountability, mm-hmm. and it has a network of soil and water districts and works with watershed districts around the state. And we had a stunning presentation yesterday in Representative Wagenius' committee about projects that have gotten done, you know, in a very quick amount of time. And we were able to see them on the screen. We were able to get the information that Representative Lilly was referencing, because they had it already with money that we appropriated last year. They have folks on the ground that have credibility with landowners. They can move quickly. They know how to leverage federal dollars, and they can get the project done. And they do that because they've been there and they're working locally, but they've put the money into the technology so that we have the accountability. You can look up every one of those easements and you have the ability for that transparency. Contrast that, and I'll go as far as Representative Hausman did. You have user groups with the Department of Natural Resources who are oblivious to the Board of Water and Soil Resources. They work with the Department of Natural Resources because that's who they buy their licenses from. They are oblivious to the work that's being done by the Board of Water and Soil Resources. And so they have needs or demands for the DNR, but the DNR is a much larger agency that responds to those constituency organizations rather than having the capacity to work on the ground with local landowners to get projects done. So they struggle with these competing interest groups that come here. Now they're not here. Many of them aren't in the room because they won't come and sit there. They're going to wait till the end of session, and they're going to hang out outside the conference committee and go to leadership and go to chairs and get what they want that way. They want to operate in the open. Whereas the soil and water districts and the Board of Water and Soil Resources are staffed and managed locally by local elected officials and are accountable. And that's where we need to invest, because they can get the job done. They've already proven it. They've gotten the job done on clean water funds and outdoor heritage funds faster than the DNR, with more transparency and more accountability.
Thank you. Representative Wagenius.
Let me follow up on what Representative Hansen just said. What struck me about the presentation and what Bowser's doing is a little bit differently than what struck Representative Hansen. The speed struck me and those things. But we put measurable outcomes in what we said. You have to have measurable outcomes for water. You have to be able to evaluate it. They went out and told people, these RFPs are going to be different. You've got to have measurable outcomes. So what we were hearing back to us was measurable outcomes for water, which is, of course, where we want to go, because then we can go back and say to our constituents, well, this is what you got for your money. So that was one thing that I thought was an extreme positive. The other thing is that I thought was a real positive is they showed us how, you know, they got $44 million worth of requests in, and they showed us the schematic of how they ranked and what the criteria they used to evaluate each of the proposals. I might have chosen a little bit different criteria, but it was number-based, and there was a fairness there, and there was an outcomes underneath it all. So that's what we should expect from everybody, this kind of rankings, this fairness, and we can see outcomes for Minnesotans. So while I was impressed, though, I just wanted to add those two things too, because I think that's some of the underlying things that made that work impressive.
Anyone else? Representative Tarkleson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The conversation has kind of wandered a little bit away from the report, but just in response to what the most recent comments, I will say that as a farmer and a rural resident of rural Minnesota, if three agencies show up on most any farm site in the state, DNR, PCA, and Bowser, it's Bowser who will get the cooperation from local landowners, right? Because they have a reputation of working on the ground and getting jobs done and working with landowners. And I would also emphasize how much is contributed by private landowners to these projects. Often they are cost share projects, so an individual's dollars are invested in these projects. But not only that, it's also an investment of time. It's also an investment of a commitment by the private landowner to maintain these projects going forward. And there's certainly, in my mind, a very high value on that commitment, because you're not going out to hire somebody to maintain these projects. You're committing a landowner to maintain these projects. And oftentimes that's a multi-generational commitment, because that landowner will teach his children that these are valuable projects that should be maintained in the future. And these are outcomes that are hard to define and hard to put, you know, to list on a list. But I think they are outcomes that we should consider as being extremely valuable as we consider how we approach these projects in the future. Getting back to the report itself, I really think we need to consider why we own property across the state of Minnesota. Our priorities sometimes change over time, and we do need to consider selling off properties that we no longer need to own. I mean, it's still going to be part of the state of Minnesota, whether the state owns it or a private landowner owns it, and many of the benefits can be, we don't have to own it to gain these benefits, I think is the bottom line. So I will leave my remarks at that.
What if we sell it to Canada?
Representative Tarkleson, I think your experience with Bowser and about the farms going from generation to generation, we have to be reminded of that once in a while, and thank you for that. When you said why we own property, you mean why we own that particular piece of property, why it was purchased, and that kind of goes back to what Representative Lilly was asking for, and maybe sometime in one generation or one century there was a need, but now we could sell it, but what if it's part of a dream? What if someday again that same reason might pop up? Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, there are a variety of dreams in the state. But I think back to the spreadsheets that Mr. Reinholz presented did we have them in this committee? Or?
Yes, we did.
About the length of time it's going to take to purchase, for instance, in-holdings in state parks or the trails that have already been designated. And I've often thought, you know, what if we sold some land and took those dollars and dumped them in on the top of that spreadsheet, how much more quickly we would reach our goal, apparent goal, of purchasing some of these lands that have been already designated for purchase. It would speed up the process dramatically.
By 100 years or so.
Perhaps.
Representative Loughlin.
Well, Madam Chair, as long as we're thinking big, the question to me is, you know, should we have a central inventory of all publicly owned lands, easements, et cetera, and not have it divided by all these different agencies? They may each have different roles, but I mean, I think we have a land management information center, but I don't think they have that charge, you know, I mean, at all. But the title that came to mind was something like that, where, you know, we would, right now it's so easy to geocode information. People should be able to go onto a website and actually see where the holdings are and what the purpose is. I mean, we could color code them and those sorts of things. And I think that in itself would help us better understand the impact of these holdings on any particular community, whether they're under the control of one agency versus another. But the other thing that strikes me is we need to define really clearly what the reason is for the easements or acquisition. And then I challenge us to look at whether that's, are we looking in the right areas of the state? We're taking opportunity zones because somebody's done a better job of environmental education, or there's sort of an ethic in a community and we do more in one area when we have maybe equally or greater valuable properties that we should be looking for somewhere else. I'm just not sure if we're as strategic in the outreach and acquisition as we might be as well. And as we get this sort of more into a common vision, I think we ought to look at that in terms of how we set up priorities for what we're even considering.
Representative Kahn.
Yes. Madam Chairman and members, first of all, Representative Loughlin, we don't have LIMIC anymore. It's now called MnGeo.
And I can't keep up with these things.
Yeah. And then the second thing is we do have a section. It's one of the places where we're going to spend money among all the things that we're cutting. In the state government finance bill, we do have, and we'll probably also be moving as a separate bill as we put things together. We're going to have a state data controller and a state webmaster that's going to work on having coordinated websites through all of the years. And I will not miss an opportunity to say that our state has 36 separate siloed data centers, and we're trying to get down to one. There's a possible proposal that maybe we can get down to using the three newest ones, and this has lots of ramifications, not only for having data in one place, not only for doing one kind of contract, not only having, but having simpler security systems based on one, two, or three instead of 36, and so forth. So we're trying to move in that direction.
Representative Guinness.
Thank you. In response to Representative Loughlin, Representative Torkelson, about the kinds of lands that we have, one of the things I will make sure that our committee sends to this committee, or the Environment and Natural Resources Committee sends to this committee, are a listing of four things. We know about parks and trails because we've concentrated on that. But DNR has a list of properties it would like to purchase, specific properties for wildlife management areas. It has a specific list for aquatic management areas. It has a specific list for
Prairie Bank easements, and it has a specific list for scientific and natural areas, which is the place where you have rare species, and so you know there is a reason to protect them because they're rare and endangered. And it turns out that the list for AMAs, WMAs, and Prairie Bank easements, which is on private property, those are about $8 million apiece. You look at the backlog for scientific and natural areas, it's $68 million. So as we have chosen where to put our money, or as DNR has chosen where to put its money, it has chosen in one group of silos and has not chosen the scientific and natural areas or the places where we have rare species. So I think that's something that this committee should discuss, and I'll just make sure that the packet that we got from DNR is handed around, like the Fenn he was talking about.
Right. Representative Haas.
Don't you think so? Yeah. Madam Chair, Jean, Representative, don't you think that we should have an emphasis on scientific and natural areas?
That's my personal opinion.
Well, we got two votes.
Because they will provide us with some of the biology that we will never, if we lose, we'll never get it back.
We'll never get it back.
So I was rather shocked to see this list, and I'll just make sure it's in folks' packets next go around.
Any other comments on the legislative audit's report, natural resources land evaluation report? Representative Haas.
Madam Chair, I think the audit is good, and I think the policy is good, but I think you also have a base attitude of whoever is in charge, and whoever is in charge should want to be auditing property that they own. Whether it's on a 20-year, 50-year, or 100-year basis, if you're in charge of it, you ought to be auditing properties that you own. You'll find out all kinds of good things or bad things when you go to audit. That's true with churches, that's true with schools, that's true with cities, that's true with counties. They have a responsibility as a manager of property to audit what they own. One time the church was auditing in the St. Cloud area their properties that they own, and they found one of my parks there. And they said, Mr. Hawes, you have a park on our property. I said, yes, Bishop, I know that, but I named it the Diocesan Park. Oh, well, it works very well. I said, well, if I knew you were going to be that benevolent, I would have asked you. So, you know, even one agency to the next may do a little squatter's rights, but if you own property and you're the governing person, you have an obligation to audit that. It shouldn't take an audit report. It shouldn't take rules and regulations. If you don't have that in the heart of your manager, you should be gone as the manager. Period. Bang. Goodbye. That was my opium for the day.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And that's a pretty good ending.
Thank you.
Also, I think Representative Mia's, what you said about the summer research projects, we will negotiate with the director of the House Research Department to see if we can accomplish those two goals. I think that, as with every audit, what Representative Hausman was saying, with every audit report that's requested, we should be doing a better job of remembering recommendations and building them into our policies that we develop. And because of the decisions that this committee has to make, especially with the 3ACE funding, we have to be particularly mindful of the recommendations in this report. And I think that this was an excellent opening discussion and trading of ideas. But I still want some suggestions in writing for what we need further information on from any of the agencies that are mentioned or from the legislative auditory themselves. And so if you will sometime today jot them down and get them to me, and then our fine staff from House and Caucus researchers and Ms. Conley and Ms. Anton will try to put the statements down that were made here so that we can have an account in writing to submit for further discussion or for further response from the agencies. We will allow some more time at a later time this year. Representative Houseman.
Madam Chair, one of my suggestions is not to you but to someone else, and so I'll say it here. Not that we have any control over their agenda, but I would hope that the Outdoor Heritage Council has as one of their agenda items a study of this report to determine does it have any implications for their work.
It does. I see a nod of a head.
Yes.
So, thank you so much.
This is a
good work. This meeting is adjourned.
So valuable.